On the line, as usual on Friday, joining us is the Minister of Justice and Solicitor General for the province of Alberta, Mr. Doug Schweitzer. And Minister, as always, we thank you for joining us.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on again.
All right, so let's start off something with here. I guess we'll go in the order of bills. Certainly watching some videos of question period, you certainly had a busy week. And let's start with the challenge by the Alberta Union of Public Employees on the Critical Infrastructure Defense Act. And just reading what they had put in a press release by President Guy Smith, he had mentioned that this is, he's putting the constitutional challenge out there because that this could possibly, he say, affect collective bargaining. But I guess my question is that you had mentioned it several times, and you were very clear on this, that this is not going to, that this bill does not get in the way to peacefully protest. So what do you think the Alberta Union of Public Employees mind frame is here and where this comes from?
Well, you know, this is one of the largest unions in the province, and the union boss is out there, spreading fear and misinformation. It's disappointing. I mean, we have, as members of cabinet and government, we have to work with our public service on a daily basis, and they do amazing work. And I just think it's a disservice to them when a union boss goes out there on his own kind of initiative and tries to scare people that their right to protest has been jeopardized, when it simply has not been jeopardized by one bit. So what you have here, remember not that long ago when there were illegal blockades across our country where our supply chains were completely jeopardized, where you had lawlessness going on across Canada? This bill deals with that. Rail blockades, people blocking the ability for people to get to work. Like, I don't know, maybe this union boss has different plans than a normal union protest or a union, pickets. I don't know what his plan is here, because if he wants to destroy Bill 1, I mean, he should tell us what railway he wants to block, because that's what this is designed to deal with.
Yeah, well, fair enough. And I know that some critics have said that maybe some of the language isn't clear in terms of what is critical infrastructure, but looking over the bill myself, I mean, like roads, railways, telephone or telecommunications installations, it sounds pretty specific.
Yeah, it really is designed to make sure that we can have a functioning society. Everyone has a right to protest. You want to go down to your city hall, you want to protest on the side of the road, but you know what? You don't get to prevent everyday Albertans from going to work. You don't get to prevent people from, putting pipe in the ground. You don't get to prevent people from, transporting their agricultural products to market. You don't get to do that. You can go and have your voice heard at the legislature. You can come out with thousands of people if your cause has that kind of an interest. But you don't get to stop people from working. You don't get to stop food from getting to grocery stores. You don't get to do that.
All right, and also as well, we saw that changing election rules around a bit, and including referendums, and I think as you said on Twitter, you can't make this up, that apparently some in the NDP had called a referendum anti-democratic. I guess in your opinion, what would be anti-democratic about giving people a choice on these matters?
Sometimes I try to understand how somebody from the NDP looks at the world, and this one here blew me away. My jaw dropped when I saw them come out with their statement calling a referendum. And a referendum is giving power directly to Albertans so they have a say on their future on significant policy issues. And the NDP calls that an anti-democratic power grab. My jaw dropped. I just simply don't understand it. You got to let that sink in. Giving people power is somehow anti-democratic, according to Rachel Notley and the NDP. This group of folks, they have a specific view of the world where they just don't trust people. I don't get it.
Fair enough. Also, we see that certain election rules, and we know Gil McGowan, who is no stranger to the Twitter world, obviously a few weeks ago he'd mentioned thing about right-wing religious nut bars type of thing, and now this time he's also talking about changing the election rules. And then we saw on Twitter that as you're saying that, though, I mean, allowing people to donate, but also capping political contributions, but also, as you had mentioned, that the Alberta Federation of Labor would have benefited from something like that.
Well, here you have another union boss coming out with unreasonable positions. This person is in charge of a union that gave millions of dollars to fight in the last election campaign, fight for political causes, and he's on the board of the NDP. And he's saying that this bill is anti-democratic, that it allows for people to have a voice. He's saying that this is going to be somehow an assault on democracy. But meanwhile, he spent millions of dollars as a union boss on the last election campaign. It's just completely, that's just Gil McGowan and the NDP and how they see the world. They don't like the changes that we're bringing in because we're finally going to get their big money out of politics. We're also going to be bringing in legislation later on that's going to cap their donations to $30,000. So these unions just simply can't go out there and spend millions of dollars trying to influence elections.
All right. And another one here is that last week or this recently you announced a drug treatment court in Red Deer. And I guess the first thing is that this was a concept that I first heard about, and it was actually brought around in the 80s. So first off, because it was kind of ties into a local question from a listener out here, is that first off, explain like what drug courts are, how they work. And number two, with the recent announcement in Red Deer, would you ever see one, the possibility of one in the Peace region one day?
So drug treatment courts are for somebody that's a drug addict. They have to admit their guilt to the criminal charges that they've been charged with. They then go through a court-supervised process for about 12 to 18 months where they have to come and report to the court on a weekly or biweekly basis on the progress that they're making in their recovery. And then through that, about 75-80% of them never repeat again. They're able to reconnect with family. They're able to get jobs again or go back to school. And it just really is a way to change people's lives. And these are individuals that normally would be stealing, $5,000 to $10,000 worth of goods a week. They'd be in and out and in and out of the criminal justice system. They're kind of your high volume, participants in the justice system, and it gives them a chance to recover. It's compassionate. The individuals that go into the program are not threats to the community. If there's ever any instance, they can be sentenced. They can be dropped out of the program if they misbehave and put back into a correctional facility. So really it's holding them accountable through a court process. And as far as getting one up in the Peace Country, we're hoping to come up to the Peace Country here soon to make a positive announcement. We're just working out some of the final details on it.
All right, that should be very interesting. And also in terms of drug treatment courts, we know that we heard some comments from the other side, and even some people on the NDP side, that a couple of survivors are from assault. So I had a chance to speak up to these things, and I thought that maybe the word of raiding the Victim Services Fund, maybe a little extreme language on that. But in terms of that, though, at least seeing their comments, they kind of mentioned that there may be some barriers to that. I guess number one, is there always going to be money available in that fund, number one? And number two, are there any barriers in place that you're aware of that maybe make it sometimes harder for victims who need that fund if, like, a family member is killed, for example, by a drunk driver or case of a sexual assault, for example? Is there, like, maybe some barriers in place that you're aware of that may impede that a little bit?
So what we've done, the Victims of Crime Fund usually has about a budget of about $40 million a year. We've actually increased it to $60 million. And we've expanded it to include public safety initiatives like drug treatment courts. That's how we're paying for these drug treatment courts in Alberta, is through the Victims of Crime Fund, by expanding it to include public safety initiatives. The Victims of Crime Fund is going to continue to be there for Albertans. This is kind of what the NDP style is. Like, I've been in the legislature now for just over a year. They're really good at trying to scare people with half information. The Victims of Crime Fund is still going to be there. The grants for victims organizations are still going to be there. We still have benefits for people that have gone through catastrophic events. Like, if somebody's been seriously sexually assaulted, somebody has been, murdered, maybe the victim's crime benefit will still be there. We're also going to go out there and consult over the next 6 to 12 months with victims groups and Albertans about how we could potentially improve the program. This is about improving it and making it better. It needs a bit of a rework. It's not working in its former structure. Now we need to improve it going forward.
All right, and also as well, I mean, we know that one thing that's been concerning up is that, as we had mentioned, you would even mention as well that you'd heard in your town halls that there's several, like, Albertans, especially in rural areas, like up here in the Peace Country, that are sleeping with axes under their beds. So I'm guessing that now, as you kind of mentioned, that now finally there's going to be hopefully some opportunities to bring in some additional officers and, I guess, keep our rural community safe.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we also are going to be hiring more prosecutors. We're hiring a round of incoming young lawyers right now. We're also making sure that we invest in the Alberta Law Enforcement Response Team. And today, the Alberta Law Enforcement Response Team made, I think it was 18 arrests with their ICE unit for people that were exploiting young people with child pornography and exploiting young Albertans. So we had that happen today, and that came from the Alberta Law Enforcement Response Team, and that's part of the public safety initiative as well that we're talking about with the changes that we're making.
All right, and another one I want to come through, and I'm not sure if you could talk about cases in other provinces, but I did remember on last week's chat we were talking about the federal gun ban legislation from Ottawa, and that if there were opportunities to challenge it. You take a look out there, and I'm not sure if you know, but there's a case out there that the Canadian Taxpayers Federation is keeping an eye on, where a small business owner and a sports shooter in Prince George, BC, is launching a challenge against the government's gun ban and buyback. So you mentioned that you would kind of keep an eye on those cases. Obviously, I wouldn't expect maybe details on this case, but are these the type of cases that your department would be keeping a look on and saying, hey, what happens here? And maybe if there's an opportunity, the government possibly could even support it, even if it's in another province.
Yeah, we're taking a look at cases like that, but that's a perfect example of this half-baked policy that Trudeau's Liberals came out with. I mean, you're talking about a situation where they banned certain firearms, didn't give, you know, these shop owners a heads up. So all of a sudden, they've got sometimes hundreds of thousands or even over $1 million worth of inventory that they can no longer sell. But at the same time, the federal government hasn't put forward the process to actually compensate them for that. So really, we've got these small business owners are screaming out for help, because they've got a bunch of inventory that they can no longer use. It's their prime area of business, and they can't operate. So I see why they're launching, you know, challenges and constitutional challenges, and we're looking for opportunities like that to support them, and we're assessing cases like that across Canada.
Okay, and I guess one last final question I have for you, and somebody had emailed this in, he did not give a name, and one of the things is that ministers, you know, Joe Biden, if he wins the U.S. presidential election, he has said that he will shut down Keystone XL pipeline. Is there anything the Alberta government or the government of Canada could do against that if he makes that decision?
Well, I mean, we're going to do everything we can to continue to progress, you know, that pipeline. I mean, we've already got the border crossing been built. You know, pipe is going into the ground in many states in the U.S. right now. Pipe's going in the ground and in Alberta, I think it's going in as well in Saskatchewan. So that's all happening today. You know, but let's fast forward. Let's assume Joe Biden wins. He then is going to have to issue an order to go rip that out of the ground across the border. That becomes all of a sudden a geopolitical issue. All of a sudden, he's telling Canada that he's not going to respect, you know, regulatory permits. He's not respecting our border, the trade agreements that we have. You know, that is a very difficult thing to do. Sometimes governing is harder than campaigning. And I think that that'd be a very difficult thing for him to actually execute in reality. And if he did, you know what, we'd be litigating it in 2 seconds. We'd be working with our, you know, federal government to push back on for trade arrangements. We'd be doing everything we could. And we would work to recover any money and losses that we had through that process, because that would be unacceptable.
All right, great. Those are all the questions we have, Minister. Anything else you'd like to add that we may have forgotten?
No, I just appreciate the long days of summer. Hopefully people are getting outside a little bit and enjoying the weather while they got it.